and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Thursday, January 31st. My name is Rob Dostra. I have a really good show on the way for you today. I was able to catch up with Grant Schiller from ESPN, and it was actually the perfect time to get him on the podcast. He is a Big 12 expert, and the Big 12 has gone absolutely off the rails over the last couple of weeks, so we were able to get his opinion on Kansas and Baylor and Iowa State and who's going to end up winning that league. Before we get into that, I got to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast in any app that you listen to podcasts in. When you rate it, when you review it, when you have any interaction with the episode itself or with the podcast, it really does help us. It helps us in the metrics. It helps us in the rankings. That makes my bosses happy. When my bosses are happy, I'm happy. When I'm happy, you are getting a better podcast. So really, giving me 5 stars and saying something nice about me is only going to make your commute, your day, your work, whatever. It's going to make it just that much better for you. So please, if you can, give me 5 stars, say something nice about me, and let's get into that conversation with Fran Fischilla. And now I'm thrilled to welcome back to the College Basketball Talk Podcast one of my favorite broadcasters on ESPN, Mr. Fran Fischilla. Fran, we had a little bit of technical difficulties there, but I finally got you on the pod. Someone was looking down on us nicely today. So what's going on, man? How you doing? I appreciate the time.
Oh, no. I'm so glad we got it worked out. To spend 20 minutes or a half hour with you talking basketball, I don't know if I would have been able to survive without this. So we got it worked out, and excited to talk to you, Rob, because I always enjoy what you have to say and write, and you certainly stand by your opinions, and that's always welcome when you love the game like I do. So let's have at it.
So the people really needed this podcast. I'm glad we were able to make it happen. And I have you on here at the perfect time because the Big 12 makes no sense. You are the Big 12 expert. But before we get into that, I've told people on this podcast like 10 times by now, but I'm doing a second broadcast of a game, VCU against George Mason on Saturday. And one of the things I've been doing for this to prepare for it is I've been studying different analysts and seeing the way that they do things. And one of the things I appreciate about the way that you call a game is you just don't talk about what happens on the floor, but you also, you know these kids and you know these coaches, and you kind of have a reporter's flair for digging up stories and finding out little nuggets of information about, you know, a kid's background or the way that a coach came up. So I'm curious, can you just kind of walk me through what your process is when you're preparing for a game or when you're preparing for another season?
And you know what? Honestly, I'm glad to share it with you, especially since you're, you know, diving into this, and I know how much you love the game. Well, first of all, I've been a junkie my whole life, so I've got a collection in my head of useless information, you know, that just because of my love of the game, I've just collected over time. I'm at the stage now where I've seen a lot of basketball in my lifetime, and it stays up in my brain, and that's a good thing. That's something I've been very passionate about. But specific to a broadcast, and where I would give you, when I say advice, I don't mean that in a negative way, because I've been someone who's gotten a lot of great advice from other broadcasters and people in the TV business. I always go into the broadcast with two ideas, and I learned this at ESPN a long time ago. Access and discovery would be number one. Tell me something about a player, coach, or team that even if I've watched Kansas play 5 times, I'm learning something new about Devon Dotson or Dedrick Lawson or Bill Self or the Big 12. So that's the first thing. Take people inside, a team, a player, a coach, a league, and give them something new. Give them something that they haven't thought of. You know, a guy like you who watches a million games a year, if you're watching a Big 12 game, I want you to be able to say, "Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Fran just told me something I didn't know." So I learned that a long time ago. Give people access to these kids and coaches and teams. And the second thing is I try to forecast. I try to study the teams, and I'm fortunate because I have a coaching background. So I watch tape. I try to figure out, you know, what TCU is going to try to do to slow down Texas Tech on Monday, and what Texas Tech will try to do to combat what TCU is going to do. And I like to forecast. I don't mind being wrong, but I like to be able to say, hey, if Texas Tech doesn't do a better job of rebounding the glass, TCU will beat this team. And so oftentimes I'm right, maybe not to the extent that Tony Romo is. And when I'm wrong, I just say, hey, you know, I thought in order for TCU to win tonight, they were going to have to dominate the glass. They didn't dominate the glass, but they made, you know, 60% of their threes, and that's why they won. So access and discovery and forecast what you think is going to happen before it happens, and those are the things I go into every broadcast with.
So you mentioned that you try to forecast a little bit. Has there ever been a game where you're thinking about what you think is going to happen and the way that this certain game is going to play out and something totally off the board happens? Like Bob Huggins comes out and plays a 2-3 zone with four power forwards on the floor at the same time or something like that?
Yeah, and you know what? You have to have the institutional knowledge of studying that team all year, and I try to do this, especially in a league like the Big 12, where once I'm locked in on January 1st, I can see trends or the lack of trends. And a good example would be on Monday night when TCU played Texas Tech. Red Raiders got off to a great start. They were carving up Jamie Dixon's man-to-man. And I had done enough homework to know that TCU had only played 36 possessions a zone the entire year. So when I went back and studied TCU a couple weeks ago for another game, I noticed that 25 of the possessions were in one game, the Kansas State game, where they played shorthanded a couple weeks ago and lost on the road. So as soon as I saw the zone on Monday night from TCU, my first reaction was to Bob Wischusen, Bob, this team does not play very much zone all season. In fact, they've only played 36 possessions, and most of those were in one game. So this is unusual for them. So those are the kind of things that you want to stay abreast of. And I'm fortunate because of my coaching brain. I feel like I'm coaching both teams at once. I have an idea of what both teams are trying to do to offset the other. And so when I am surprised, I still think I have the institutional knowledge to be able to say, one more example, every 5 years Bill Self will come out in a triangle and two. It'll be a game that you least expect it. Maybe they're getting carved up, and all of a sudden, to change the tempo of the game, he'll come out in a triangle and two. He did it in the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight game against Carolina maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And so when that happens, it is unusual, but I can be able to say, hey, I haven't seen a triangle in two in 5 seasons from Kansas. This is unusual. And that's the stuff I kind of keep stored in my head.
Now, last thing before we actually get into the Big 12, when you get to the point in the year where you are just doing Big 12 game after Big 12 game, and you're having some of these same teams week over week, are there things where you'll try to save something for a certain game, or you try to kind of ration the stories that you actually tell so you have something for a later broadcast? Or is it just kind of as these things come up and as you find them, you just kind of, you know, whatever you can add? Like, let's say that Matt Mooney goes off and has 22 in one game and you have something right about him. Is that just when you kind of pull it out?
Well, it's both. It really is both, because I was taught at ESPN, repeat your best stuff. So sometimes a Kansas fan will tweet me and say, hey, you keep telling me that Marcus Garrett played for his high school coach who worked for Eddie Sutton at the same time Bill Self was on the staff. Well, yeah, I'll get that in, and maybe not once a game, but every couple games. The Kansas fan might have heard it, but the average college basketball fan watches no more than 22 minutes of a two-hour broadcast. So I don't mind repeating stuff that I want the casual fan to know about, but I don't necessarily ration it. But here's a good example. When Texas Tech played TCU for the first time this year, it was the right time to be able to say, Matt Mooney's off to a great start tonight. Don't forget, last year when he was at South Dakota, they went into TCU, scared the daylights out of him, and he dropped 31 on them. So that might not be appropriate or interesting in a TCU broadcast in early January against West Virginia, but it fits perfectly when they're playing Texas Tech. So it's a little bit of both. I repeat some of the things I want people to know about. There are other times I drop something in that's relevant to that game. And, Rob, to your point, I'm always looking for new information on players to tell the viewer about and educate them. Kawhat Noy would be a great example. He's about to become one of the Big 12's best players, and not a lot of people know that he grew up with Ben Simmons. Dave Simmons, Ben's dad, coached him probably since the time he was 8 years old, and that Ben and Kawhat played for Kevin Boyle at Montverde Academy in Florida. So those are the kind of things I try to get out on the air, and it's a combination of all those things you mentioned.
Well, I actually knew that about Kawhi Noy because I watched the Texas Tech TCU game when you busted out that nugget. So I'm up on my Fran Fischilla knowledge. Now, you mentioned Marcus Garrett, and I want to start there when we talk about Kansas, because to me he is – Bill Self has kind of got himself a little bit of a conundrum there, because I think he has to have Garrett on the floor if he wants to play small because of how good he is defensively. But what teams have started doing is helping off him and basically daring him to beat them. And he hasn't been able to win that matchup. So if you are Bill Self, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with Marcus Garrett? How do you deal with, you know, the injuries that have kind of taken a toll on this team?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I think in fairness to Marcus Garrett, while you and I both know he's not a great shooter, anything but, he's a below average shooter. There's no question, 23% from three. It's not just Marcus Garrett's lack of outside shooting. It's really the team. The last three seasons, when Bill Self's teams were small, quote-unquote, playing around Azubuike when he was healthy, they were still able to, I mean, they were knocking down 40% of their threes, and they were shooting more threes than at any time in Bill Self's coaching career. So this year, because of the necessity being the mother of invention, and by that I mean Doak's out, and they still need to play small because the strength of their team is still, at least in numbers anyway, around the perimeter, certainly their best player by far is Dedrick Lawson. They're still playing small, but it's a different kind of small than a year ago. So they're definitely giving up some things by playing Marcus, but I would contend they're giving up a lot by playing Quentin Grimes, who's struggling from the perimeter, and Devon Dotson, who's making 40% of his threes, I believe, but is not taking that many. So I think all in all, Bill's really comfortable with Marcus, what Marcus brings them. He had a couple of back-to-back high-scoring games, although, you know, in the last couple he hasn't scored as much. But he's a significant player, I think, for them because despite the lack of outside shooting, I think he's a security blanket for Bill Self. He gives you defense. He gives you the playmaking. He's become a better driver to the basket and scoring in the lane. So it's kind of like you got to pick your poison, and I think he's willing to roll with Marcus Garrett based on all the other things he does, Rob.
Yeah, and to your point, the last 2 years when they've been playing small, everybody except for, I believe it's Malik Newman, is either still playing for Kansas or currently in the NBA. And I think Malik is averaging, I checked it the other day, I want to say he's averaging like 12 points in the G League, so it's not like he's off to a bad start necessarily in his professional career.
Remember, let me tell you something. They would not have gotten to the Final Four last year without Malik's drastic improvement at the very end of the season, regular season, Big 12 and NCAA. You know, we were waiting, like you were, you know, we were all waiting for Malik Newman to be the guy we heard about. And I coached him at the Under Armour All-American camp and at the Steph Curry camp, so I kind of knew his game. But the Malik Newman that people thought they were going to see, they didn't see till the very end of his career.
So what do you think the answer is for Kansas? Do they just have to find a way to get Gerald Vick to start making shots again, or Quentin Grimes to find his confidence, or, you know, Ochai Agbaji, I think is how you pronounce it. I can never get that right.
Yeah, Ochai Agbaji. G-silent, Agbaji, yep.
What a great story he is. I think he's kind of the X factor for him moving forward because he can, I mean, he's so athletic and he's able to knock down shots. And it looks like he's really starting to figure it out, you know?
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Agbaji, I went to practice in October and I just couldn't believe, you know, I remember when they got a commitment from him, and it's kind of one of my pet peeves. I love all my recruiting guru brothers at ESPN and other places, but I don't even think ESPN had him ranked. And then he signed to Kansas, and he moved up like into the, I don't know, 200s or 150. But because Bill Self signed him, somebody probably figured out he must be pretty good. He wouldn't be going to Kansas. But he was a late bloomer. There's no question he came out of nowhere playing in Kansas City. But when I watched them in October, Rob, I was blown away by him, as were a lot of people at practice. And Bill said, and I asked him, well, why isn't he going to play? And he said, well, we've got enough depth on the wing, and we really, I think it was a matter of giving K.J. Lawson a chance. Your best player is Dedrick Lawson, and his brother transfers to Memphis. And if you play Agbaji early in the year, it's going to take away somebody's minutes, and it probably would have been K.J. Lawson's and now you may have a chemistry issue. So the fact that they had some injuries and they took the red shirt off, people are seeing what Bill Self already knew, and that is this kid is immensely talented, the most athletic guy in the team. I contend the best NBA prospect. Don't put him in a mock draft right now. You know, let's wait a couple years. But really a talented player. And so, hey, I think he had 18 the other night at Texas.
24.
There you go. I remember he had 18 during the game. So that's where he is, and they need him because he gives you that great combination of athleticism and defense, and he's got this ability to score, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, there's a kid on the George Mason that is kind of going through the same thing. They had two injuries kind of out of nowhere to guys that played on the wing for him, and this kid that they were redshirting came in his first game at Rhode Island. He came in, and it was a steal and a dunk. Then he got a block shot, and at the other end, he got an offensive rebound and another layup in his first minute stepping onto the floor, and he hasn't come out of the starting lineup since. So it's a similar situation. I feel like I can't remember that happening before. Was it Caris LeVert? I feel like that's the last time that there was a big-time guy that they pulled a red shirt off of.
Well, let me tell you what's happening, too, at the high major level. Think about it, right? I said to the guys on the Kansas staff in October, well, you can redshirt him, but you're not going to have him for 5 years. You know, that kid is good enough, Abaji, that I think, and hopefully he'll be really patient and listen to Bill, but I could see, and I said this on the broadcast, I thought last year, I know I said this earlier in the year, David McCormick's going to be a very good Big 12 player and probably make an NBA team someday. McCormick and Abaji were going to be sophomore starters, and we would have found out how good Abaji was. And I think he'll be at Kansas through his junior year, but I don't see him being at Kansas years 4 and 5. He's that talented. So what I think coaches are doing right now, first of all, at the power conference level, Rob, it's really hard to redshirt a guy that's pretty good because, A, he may transfer as a fifth-year senior, as a grad transfer, and B, you know, he may be good enough to turn pro, and if he does, you're going, well, why didn't we play him as a freshman? So this happened by necessity, and I think it's beneficial for Kansas, but it also gives people around the country who follow, you know, Kansas and the Big 12 and college basketball an idea like, wow, they were really redshirting this guy, and here he goes and drops 24 on the road in a Big 12 game.
So what's going on at Baylor? They've lost Tristan Clark. They're down Jake Lindsey, and somehow Scott Drew has this team. I believe they're still in first place, tied with Kansas State for first place in the Big 12 right now. Talk to me about that. What is going on there?
Well, you know, I talk to Coach Drew every week, and I'm not name dropping, but we've been friends for a very long time, going back to his dad's days. And I was sick for them when Tristan Clark got hurt because he was one of those kids, Rob. One of the things I love about being in the Big 12 is, and I've said this on the air, and you may agree or disagree, but other than Kansas getting one-and-done guys, and occasionally Texas will get one, of course, Trey Young, the best thing about the Big 12 is the development of kids who end up being 3- and 4-year guys. And, I mean, I can regurgitate a long list, and you know, Buddy Hield, Devontae Graham, Keenan Evans, Javon Carter.
Frank Mason.
Yeah, it goes on and on. I mean, it really does. I mean, and Baylor's had a lot of those guys. And Tristan Clark, as you know, probably 10 games into his sophomore year, was about to become one of the best big men in the Big 12 and was going to be a guy that we'd all be talking about right now midway through conference play. So it's unfortunate that he got hurt. And I thought they were dead in the water, honestly. I think I did their Kansas game right after he got hurt, and they got down 18-2. They made a comeback. But I was really anxious for the Bears. And Scott Drew has done an amazing job. Their guard play has solidified. Mekhi Mason was really not the Mekhi Mason we remember prior to his 2 years of injuries at Yale. But he's finally healthy. Jared Butler fell into their lap because of the Kyra Lewis situation in Alabama. Baylor was his second choice because he's played at the same high school as Rico Gathers. So they got Butler. Mark Vidal is Dennis Rodman, only a sophomore. They're really getting and they're sharing the ball. And Mario Kegler, the transfer from Mississippi State, is starting to show signs of life. They play a zone. They play a defense like Syracuse that can be very sticky, difficult to figure out. They're playing hard. They're sharing the ball. And right now it's an incredible story. And it kind of defeats the narrative, which long ago should have been defeated, that Scott Drew doesn't know what he's doing. Because to me, I've said it many times, going back to 2002, it's still to me one of the most remarkable rebuilding jobs in the history of college basketball.
I wouldn't even call it rebuilding. He straight up built that program. It's not like when Dave Bliss came in and Baylor was, you know, what Kansas is now. They didn't really have any basketball history at all. And now they've been put into a situation where, like, getting to two Elite Eights is not enough for that program. It's pretty amazing what he's done with expectations there.
Completely, completely correct. You know, Terry Teagle, Vinnie Johnson, a couple others, David Wesley. But in 70 years before Scott got there, there was essentially very, very little basketball history. So kudos to him, because I was worried for them. I really was. I thought they might be at the bottom of the league, and who knows what's going to happen, you know, this next 5 weeks. But they've certainly impressed a lot of people nationally.
Well, you like forecasting, so tell me what you think is going to happen. Is Kansas going to continue this run? Is it Iowa State? Is it Kansas State that's going to end up winning that league? Or are we going to have, like, five teams finish 11-7?
Well, I think you're going to have a champion with six losses. And I also think that, you know, the crazy thing about this league is, let's say TCU hops into the top 25, which they did, and they were early in the year, but they you don't want to be a Big 12 team that cracks the top 25, because then you're going to lose a road game somewhere and you'd be out of the top 25. But what I think is going to happen, and what is happening right now, on a neutral site, I do think Iowa State, top to bottom, is the best team in the league. And they obviously have played Kansas well twice, including a blowout at home. But I still think Kansas is going to go undefeated at home, which is the key to their success through the years. And I still think they're going to be in the running for the title. Iowa State, of the teams that we know are pretty good, including Texas Tech and Kansas State, and maybe, you know, who knows, Oklahoma, if they can get back on track, TCU. Iowa State has the best combination in the league, in the conference, of offense and defense, Rob. And this is a year, if you look in the Big 12, it's not a sexy league. Three or four of the best players are out for the year. You know, Azubuike, Clark, Kanate down at West Virginia. Wade was out the first half of the year. It's just not a sexy league, but if you look at the KenPom numbers, there's like six teams in the top 24 in defensive efficiency. So every night, home and away, because it is double round robin, is hand-to-hand combat. And you can't get, you know, like as someone like yourself who follows the country closely, but maybe doesn't have a microscopic view of the Big 12, you can't, like, lose a game at K-State and say, well, that team's in a slump, because a lot of teams are going to lose at K-State or at Iowa State or at Baylor. And this year we're just going to have, you know, there's a chance eight teams could get in. It's probably going to be seven or six, but they're going to cannibalize each other at some point. But it is a really good league from the standpoint of competitiveness.
Yeah, to your point, I think what's notable is when teams pick up road wins in that conference. And whoever ends up getting, you know, three or four road wins in league play is probably going to end up being the team that wins it all. One last thing on Iowa State. Lindell Wigginton had, I think it was 17 at Ole Miss in that win, and then last night he went for 28 against West Virginia. If he gets it going, I think that's the difference maker for Iowa State.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's no question, and I think it's even more important than that. I think chemistry. I talked to Coach Prohm a couple weeks ago, and they were trying to figure out a way to get him into the starting lineup. You know, obviously he's the leading returning scorer in the league. He did some things as a freshman, you know, that only Kevin Durant did. So Lindell's a tremendous talent, and last night he played 25 minutes off the bench. I love their starting five. I really do. The two freshmen have been better than we thought. Nick Weiler-Babb, to me, I was telling Seth Davis, he's looking for glue guys for his all-glue team, and Nick Weiler-Babb is one of the best glue guys in college basketball, hands down, and most people don't even know his name. He averaged 13-7-7 last year before he got hurt. This year, the numbers are not quite the same, but if you look at how much he plays every night, key to the team. Halliburton, I've said it since November, he's a 6'5" Monte Morris. The key is going to be to this team, and this team can go really far. It's good enough to even get to a Final Four if the chemistry is right. And for the chemistry to be right, if Wigginton and Lard are fine coming off the bench and playing 25 to 30 minutes, and not so much Lard with that many minutes, but Wigginton, if the chemistry is good, this team is extremely dangerous. If Wigginton wants to, because he wants to be in the NBA in the worst way, you know, he put his name in last year. If he understands that NBA teams are watching him every night anyway, and how he adjusts to being not a role player, but because the team's gone and done so well, I think it bodes well for their team going forward into the month of February and March.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, because in the NBA, he's not going to be, you know, Steph Curry or Kevin Durant or one of these superstars. He's going to be a guy that's kind of asked to play a role, maybe something similar to being a microwave scorer off the bench. So
it's absolutely right. That's what he is going to. I'd be shocked if he's a star in the NBA. There's only 25 of them. I think your point is right. He's going to be a microwave kind of guy off the bench, and that's it's kind of what he's doing right now. As long as he gets starters' minutes, I hope he'll be okay with that.
All right, last thing I got for you, Fran, and then I'm going to let you get out of here. I know you know that Villanova program well. Are you buying this this 8-0 start? Are they back to being the Villanova of old, or is this kind of a situation where they are beating up on a Big East that's in a little bit of a rebuilding year?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think you've seen me say this on Twitter. I mean, their culture is incredible, and I'm spoiled. You know, I have a knowledge of that program fairly intimately, but their culture is unbelievable. And I have to tell you that I'm stunned by what they're doing based on losing four guys to the NBA. Because you and I last year at this particular time, you and I both could have figured out, along with others, that they were going to lose Brunson and Bridges. So losing Dante and Spellman, I think, really set them back. I'll say this. I'm a huge fan of Marcus Howard. I think what he's doing right now at Marquette is similar, and it's crazy we don't talk about it, but it's very similar to what Trae Young did last year. I mean, if not more efficient, to be honest with you. But having said that, two things about Villanova. Number one, you really got to – I think Phil Booth has got to be in consideration for Big East Player of the Year, along with Marcus Howard right now. Maybe Shamari Ponds if St. John's gets back on track after last night. So what Phil Booth is doing is unbelievable. And Eric Paschal, to me, I noticed that my buddy Sam Vecini at The Athletic moved him from 47 in his mock draft up to 20. And I've talked to NBA guys. If there's 35 better players coming into the NBA next year than that guy, then I don't know basketball, because to me he's very much in the mold of Draymond Green. He's playing better. Those two guys are playing at a high level, and typical of Villanova, we're seeing guys like Sadiq Bey, Demir Cosby, Roundtree, Colin Gillespie are all 3- and 4-year Villanova type guys. So kudos to Jay, because he's built an incredible culture there, and right now I think they're winning with culture and two tremendous seniors.
I love that Sadiq Bey story, because he's not even supposed to be there. If he was going to be at NC State, and I think they ran out of a scholarship. I can't remember exactly what it was, but they ran out of a scholarship for him, so they had to cut him loose, and Villanova swooped in. And everyone was talking about Quinterly and Brandon Slater and Cole Swider, and all of a sudden Sadiq Bey comes in, and he's out here. He's the best freshman on the team.
Yeah, and you know what? Same high school as Josh Hart, so that certainly helped. And you know, if Quinterly and Swider, who's out right now with the wrist injury, and the other guys like Brandon Slater is going to be a good player. I mean, it's the proof's in the pudding. If you're patient and you don't necessarily have to, you know, if you can check your ego at the door and you can put those press clippings away from high school, you know, these kids. Sadiq Bey, I said it in the fall. He's Dante Cunningham. He'll end up, as a tremendous 4-year player and play in the NBA, and he'll be like a Dante Cunningham, and some of these other guys will end up like Darren Hilliard, and a few of them will be first-round picks. So that culture is really cool. I'm always impressed with going to practice and watching the things they do, because I can honestly tell you this, Rob. I coached against Jay 20 years ago, and he's a way better coach now even than he was then. And he was a good coach at Hofstra early at Villanova, but guys heading to the Hall of Fame for good reason.
All right, last thing, I got 30 seconds for you. Phil Booth, I think that he is going to be the steal of the second round of this year's draft. Are you with me?
I am with you. I absolutely am with you. He's bigger than people realize. that league values shot makers. And the last thing I'll tell you, because it related back to Lindell Wigginton, I always say this to my friends, 25 NBA stars, the other 425 guys in that league are role players. Some of them are really highly paid role players, but they're role players. And I'd be surprised if Phil Booth isn't at least on somebody's 15-man roster, maybe a two-way guy, but too much character, too much improvement, too much skill, too much shooting. I'm of the opinion, only in the last couple weeks, by the way, that he'll make an NBA team.
Fran, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks for hopping on.
Always a pleasure, Rob.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.